Chapter 21, The Twelfth Name.
So what? This is a list of 11 names, Kyra said. He slid the sheet of paper back across the desk.
And your penmanship is slovenly.
You know what these are, of course, said Fenris.
He gave Kyra a shrewd look that hinted he did not, in fact, believe Kyra understood at all, and wanted to hear him say it.
No, I went daft, and you shall need to find a replacement for me as well, Kyrus said, and crossed his arms.
He glared back at Fenris from under his lowered brow.
It is the new inner circle. I thought the three names at the top made that plain enough.
Yes, 11 names, not yet 12.
Names I knew yesterday.
You nearly finished the task Warlock Roshan set for you, Kyrus said.
Is this yet another attempt to put my name down there and bring me into your stable of sorcerers?
They were meeting in Fenris's old office in the Tower of Contemplation. Despite the promotion to second senior member of the Inner Circle, behind only Roshan, he had not moved closer to the Warlock's central location in the Sanctum.
I figured as much, Fenris admitted. Might be that there is another sort of use we might find for such an opening.
Fenris smiled, his wrinkled lips stretching taut as they forced his jowls wide.
If you intend on playing this game of baiting me and daring me to guess, I swear I will appoint someone to attend these impromptu meetings in my place. I have neither the time nor the patience for it, Kyra said.
Oh, I thought you loved games. Warlock Roshan even let you play chess using the army for pieces. Of course, you make a bit of a...
Out with it, Kyra snapped, or this meeting is over.
Bring your girl Juliana back. Roshan said you had some means to send messages to her. Avail yourself of them, and I can install her as the 12th.
Fenris folded his hands over his paunch and slouched back in his chair, watching Kyrus's reaction.
Is this a jape of some sort? Kyrus asked. If so, I fail to see the humor. Not only would Juliana hate the thought of being tied in the Tower of Contemplation, she hates Celia Mistfield with a furor, and I think she and my sister have a grudge going back to the Academy. You would never get anything done.
You underestimate her. Besides, a little fire in the Sanctum debates might be a welcome thing.
The fire might not be figurative, Kyrus warned. Half the reason I got her out of the city was because I feared those assassinations would get laid at her feet, and she would prove them right by confronting her accuser.
We can be reasonable here, Brannis. The war is winding down. Tensions are easing. Take the time to salve raw feelings and soothe weary minds. You yourself look like you could use having her back, said Fenris.
Kyrus frowned. Fenris is trying awfully hard to get me to summon her home.
She is a widow, you know, of course, and I think the Circle might appreciate seeing that little matter settled. I have it on good authority that Roshan would approve the match.
Kyrus's eyes widened but stared into space.
No, he said.
He turned to fix Fenris with a look that made the old sorcerer squirm in his chair.
Roshan wants her as collateral. He has said as much that he fears my reckless power, and now he wants Juliana here to keep me in check. He had thought Celia would do, but he knows that Juliana would work much better for that purpose. He ordered you to get me to bring her back, didn't he?
Warlock Roshan rarely orders anything, at least where I am concerned,
Fenris replied with a condescending smile.
I know Caladrus kept his machinations well hidden. But how is it that you escaped retribution when the rest of the Inner Circle was slain? Kyrus asked. He cared not whether he offended him. He found himself hoping he would. He could envision angering Fenris to the point that he drew in anger, then responding in kind and blasting him through the wall.
Do you have some deeper plot, more patience, or are you just a coward?
Have a care, Brannis, Fenris cautioned. I am patient, but not in the way you imply. I do not act rashly, and I certainly do not act against Warlock Roshan, or Emperor Somek. It is part of my secret to longevity. Frankly, Brannis, he is worried about you. You would do well to settle yourself into a nice quiet life. War's almost over.
Let Rashan pick over the bones of the outside world. You ought to worry about helping us keep things orderly here. You have potential. You can do great things one day. Do not set yourself in Rashan's path. That is the best advice I can give you.
And you think I should call Juliana home? Kyrus asked.
Fenris nodded.
Fine, Kyrus agreed.
As soon as I have Rashan's head.
He turned to leave. I have other matters that require me.
Leaf-bare trees made the edges of the clearing harder to make out, especially as the wind swayed them. Juliana eased the starlit marauder down, hearing snaps and scratching as the ship's hull made its own path through the branches. They were great old trees that an enterprising druid could easily have built a cottage beneath. Juliana landed the ship with a rustle of dry leaves and a thud. With a practiced hand, she shed the safety harness, stretching this way and that to relieve the stiffness of hours spent flying. She crept along the uneven deck to the railing and looked out into the autumn forest.
Winter in the north, summer in the south.
She wondered if Teba could win a two-season reprieve on the technicality that, though summer in Cadran, it was nearly winter in Acardia. It was unlikely, but the warlock's moods had led him to stranger fancies. She checked her daggers to make sure they were loose in their sheaths, and reinforced the shielding spells she had grown accustomed to always keeping active.
I am getting more like Soria all the time.
Her vigil had lasted too long for her comfort. She had not realized the knots her stomach had tied itself into, until she saw Teba emerge from the trees, and they came untangled.
Took your time, didn't you? She called down to him.
I am a man who has troubles disappearing, Teba shot back. It is more work than you might expect. Get us airborne as soon as I am aboard. I have no wish to be seen leaving.
With me,
she added silently for him. Neither side in the conflict would have welcomed knowledge of the two of them sharing accommodations on a Cadran airship. It was something only a twinborn would understand. Neither of them viewed the situation as traitorous, but they knew that they would likely be alone in that opinion if caught.
Get in, then, she replied. I don't know, maybe running might help.
Teba gave a lopsided smile and broke into a jog as Juliana made her way back to the helm and buckled herself in.
Well, merciful Tansha be praised. Something went right for once.
Realizing they were not yet off the ground, she panicked momentarily, but the escape went without incident. She aimed them toward the clouds and the obscurity they offered. Kyrus ran into Varnus as he made his way between the Tower of Contemplation and the main body of the palace. He had seen the twinborn guard captain's hulking source approaching from a side corridor, and for a moment he had thought to evade him. To his chagrin, his conscience overruled him, and he resigned himself to taking on whatever burden Varnus was about to lay across his shoulders.
Brennus!
Varnus called after him as he rounded the corner and quickened his pace to catch up.
Brennus, a word, if I might.
Palace staff had been struggling with what to call him since his tenure as Grand Marshal had ended, and his new position had no official moniker. Many had gone back to calling him Sir Brennus, but Varnus had taken to dropping honorifics entirely. Kyrus supposed it was simpler, even if it sounded overly familiar. Kyrus stopped and turned to look back over his shoulder.
What is it? I'm on my way to see Emperor Somek.
This'll just be a moment. Besides, I'm on my way there myself.
Kyrus pointed to the door of a guard station, and Varnus shooed the occupants out. He followed the guard captain inside, and threw a shielding spell across the door as he closed it.
How goes your traveling magic show? Kyrus asked.
He leaned against one of the plain wooden desks that the guards used for writing their logbooks and filing written reports, those that were literate, at least.
We're making good time heading west along the foothills, Varnus replied. I've been doing well to keep Wendell's shows to a minimum, though he's got some twist in his brain about them and won't quit entirely.
So why the urgency? Kyrus asked.
Something happened last night, Varnus answered, lowering his voice. We stopped in some sleepy little mining town, and the place looked like it had been attacked. Bodies were lined up in the road, A bunch of outlanders. Didn't get a good look, but sure as sunrise they weren't to Kalish. Constables took us out of the wagon we rode in on, dragged us off and questioned us. "Are you all right?" Kairos asked. "Did they take the boy?" "It's Takalia, not Herlin. We're fine, Jaden and all. We had nothing to do with that, and it didn't take them too long to figure that out. Still, from the bit of a look I had at the bodies, I think they were probably coin blades."
"Well, thank you for keeping me apprised, but..."
"Was it your doing?" Varnas interrupted.
"Mine?" Kairos asked. "I have been down in Kesh, and Brannis is not so mobile as to get between..."
"No, I meant, did..."
"Stop interrupting me," Kairos snapped. "You want to know whether I set protectors along your path to ward off Denric Zane's hired blades? The answer is no. I advised you to part ways with Wendell for your own safety. It sounds like a good time to repeat that advice. That boy is a jousting prize at this point, and you are liable to get run down by someone looking to win him."
"You don't suppose it might be Tanner coming to the rescue, do you?" Varnas asked. The descriptions they gave of the two killers was a little vague, but they were outlanders, not Takalish, and the bodies looked cut up pretty good.
"Well, unless Denric Zane and Tanner took to land to look for the boy themselves, I think not. Tanner's my liaison to Magrin, for all that is worth these days, and has not left Zane's ship."
Varnas's shoulders slumped. "Well, I'll be careful, I guess. I was hoping you might have some idea about what was going on," Varnas said.
He reached for the door handle but paused a moment, sniffing the air, and reached instead for the mug on the guard's desk. Lifting it to his nose, Varnas frowned at the contents. He took a great snort that near turned Kairos's stomach, then spat into the mug and returned it to its place.
"Teach him to drink on duty," Varnas muttered.
Kairos quietly released the spell, holding the door shut, and leaned away to let Varnas pass. When the guard captain was out of sight, Kairos gave the mug a poke and spilled it across the table. Deserved or not, his stomach felt better knowing no one was going to drink it. Emperor Somek was holding an informal court in his spacious chambers. Since he had realized he could get away with it, he did nearly everything informally. A pillowed lounging couch served as his throne, and he half-sat, half-lay, sprawled across it as Kairos entered.
"Sir Brannis, come in, come in. What kept you?"
Emperor Somek smiled as he spoke, but Kairos heard the reproach clearly enough. "Where were you? I sent for you an hour ago."
"I was detained, seeing to a few of the trifling but utterly essential tasks that I look after, so that you do not have to divert your attention from all this," Kairos replied, waving his hand around to indicate everything in the room. The pillows on which his courtiers reclined, the musicians, the wine pourers, the harlots who had been added to the serving staff at his command. The Emperor's smile flickered briefly before resuming its indolence.
"Well, you are here now. I have an announcement I plan to make. Sir Brannis, you advised me to spend my days finding an empress, did you not?"
"Yes, Your Highness, I did," Kairos replied.
"I believe you also forbade me choosing my empress from among the circle. Is that not also true?"
"I pointed out that there would be opposition from the inner circle and advised strongly against it, Your Highness. I did not, cannot, forbid you anything," answered Kairos. He sensed a trap being set, but had no choice but to play along.
"There was also talk that I ought to find a more decorous way to test the noble ladies with whom I would share my empire," Somek said.
He painted pretty words around treating half the empire's unwed noble girls as whores, and pitting them against one another for his affections.
"But I have found a path around that mountain."
Somek paused and widened his smile. Kairos kept a sigh in check.
"What solution have you devised?" he asked dutifully.
"I shall wed them all," the Emperor proclaimed.
There were gasps from some, cheers from others. When those died down, Kairos remained staring at Emperor Somek, having said nothing. The Emperor looked at Kairos with a simpering grin on his face.
"Well, what say you?"
"I think I would like a private word with the Emperor," Kairos said. The musicians stopped. A few of the more attentive courtiers slunk quickly toward the exit.
Before long, everyone had gotten the hint and vacated the Emperor's chambers. The last to go were the two guardsmen who departed after receiving nods of acknowledgement from Kyrus.
"What?" Emperor Somek asked.
"You disapprove?"
"This is not how things are done in the Kadrin Empire," Kyrus replied,
the only argument that came readily to mind. The idea was incalculably stupid. He could not find an end amid the tangled problem from which to begin unraveling it, for the neophyte politician.
"Not at all. It makes some sense, and there is precedent for it. I had the Blood Scholars look into it for me. It seems that in times of crisis, multiple imperial consorts have been a way to spread the dynastic seed a bit and ensure succession."
The Emperor looked appallingly pleased with himself.
"When was this? I've not ever heard of such a thing, and I do enjoy a good history book."
"It's been a while, I admit, but that's nothing keeping us from dusting off old traditions and polishing them up a bit."
"How long ago?"
"A while."
"How long? They must have told you. The Blood Scholars are very thorough," Kyrus pressed.
"I don't know exactly. The last to have made such arrangements was Emperor Thessalon. 1700, perhaps 1800 summers ago," Somek said with a shrug.
"Emperor Thessalon's first two wives were both barren, by stroke of ill luck. Normally, empresses were exiled or executed when they failed to produce an heir. Thessalon just wed again and kept the first two by his side as a kindness. This is not the same thing."
"Asterinor the Third, then," Emperor Somek said, not granting Kyrus any time to sink the claws of his argument deeper.
"Asterinor, Asterinor," Kyrus said aloud to himself.
"Asterinor the Fourth must have been nearly 3,000 winters ago. Who was the Third, then?"
"His father," Somek answered.
"Reigned for but two summers and a season. Fathered 8 heirs, the eldest being his namesake."
"Ah, yes, the lecherous emperor who was killed by one of his own consorts in a jealous fit," Kyrus added, his memory refreshed on the subject. "Not the best of examples to follow.
I had hoped that a more vigilant group of guards might be available in modern times than in those bygone days. Besides, now we know to protect me from them," Somek said.
Kyrus opened his mouth to speak, but Somek stole his initiative.
"And I have thought this through. I have a tenuous position, with no support but what Rashan offers me. This will give more than a dozen noble houses a stake in my reign. There might be some bloody business to hold in check, of course. There will certainly be some competition for the first heir, and he will be a target for assassination. These are problems we can work around."
Kyrus had queued up a number of arguments in his head, each of them a different angle from which to chip away at the Emperor's strained logic.
"There is just no reasoning with him," Kyrus decided.
He let the arguments tumble through his mental fingers and shatter on the floor.
"As you command, Your Highness."
"No point in drawing this whole business out. This is bound to be contentious enough without giving the nobles time to gripe. Can you have everything arranged by the solstice? Best time for an imperial wedding."
Kyrus stared at him in shock.
"That only leaves 4 days.
"Excellent. Plenty of time."
"He got you good, didn't he?" Axterion asked.
The ancient sorcerer chuckled.
"I wouldn't have thought that bugger had the gumption to pull off a trick like this."
"I did not anticipate it either," Kyrus admitted. "He seems to have already set everything in the works with the Blood Scholars, making sure everything had precedent. He was right. Gut him 6 ways. He has the authority to do this."
"Nobles will get in a snit for sure," Axterion said.
He shrugged.
"What are they going to do, though? I'll tell you what they'll do. Get in a snit. That's the start and finish of it. It might be a nice long snit, don't mistake me, and it might even be uncomfortable snit to be around. In the end, though, just a snit. Days are gone when a noble army would get itchy thinking they might take on an emperor's troops. Gone long before my time at that."
"What about the emperor?" Kyrus asked. "He could wind up like Asterinor the Fourth."
"Boy, you're aiming to either vex me or test me," Axterion said.
waggling a warning finger in Kairos's direction.
It was Asterinor the Third who pulled this stunt last, and got a chalice of poisoned wine for his trouble. I've forgotten more than you've learned yet, young dragon. All that power can't be getting to your head yet, can it?
I hope not. I still have a lot to learn before I can hope to confront Rashaan. Have you had any luck in your research? Kairos asked, changing the subject.
Aye, after a fashion, Axtarion replied, scratching his head. I have had a rare and tedious sort of success. I have established that no one in the history of the Kadrin Empire has left any written record of what lies deep in Padawai Wood.
Well, so much for that, Kairos said. He slumped back in his chair.
Bah! You don't know a dratted thing about humans, do you? Axtarion asked.
How do you mean?
Have you looked around in libraries?
Axtarion asked. Kairos nodded.
There's a book in there on every bedratted subject the gods saw fit to build this world with. Anything mildly interesting, and a dozen poor scribblers wrote about it. You mean to tell me that a little forest not far outside Kadrus has sat there for 6,000 winters, and no one thought to have a look? No one keeps humans away from a mystery that long with nothing to show for the attempt. Someone doesn't want folks knowing what's there.
Kairos smiled. It was good reasoning. Grandfather, I know you do not get out much, but I think it might be time for you to have a talk with Fenris Destrier, Kairos suggested.
What's that chubby little jackal gotten himself mixed in now? Never looks where he's heading, because he's always got his nose up someone's backside, looking to push them up a ladder ahead of him.
Kairos chuckled, remembering that Axtarion knew everyone in the circle from a much different perspective than he ever had. I think he could use a bit of help filling a list. Just ask him. Kairos lay awake atop his blankets, fully clothed but for his boots. Far away, how far no one could tell him, Brannis lay awake as well in the Keshi city of Skazgrin. Kairos relaxed his mind until the black marble ceiling of his bedchamber melted away, and he could feel a rhythmic breathing tickle his chest. The plan was to set out again at dawn and scour the city. They had ridden the day through and collapsed into bed once they had reached an inn. Soria still had trail dust graying her hair, and both of them smelled of horse sweat. "Soria, my love," Brannis said. He kissed her forehead and jostled a bit to rouse her. Before even coming fully awake, her first move was to climb farther atop him. He put a hand on her side and gently rolled her the other way. "Soria, we have a bit of time. Finish reading me the book. Who knows when our next chance will be?"
"I was thinking the same thing," she mumbled, still not yet awake.
Brannis gave her a moment to collect her wits and orient herself once more between worlds. In her cabin on the starlit Marauder, Juliana opened the Piece of Talax and began reading once more about Talax's obsession with immortality. Kairos listened in from Vaedrus as Brannis heard the tale continue. Talax had demanded of the immortals that they share the secret with him, but was rebuffed, told that it was not possible for him. Talax knew that the immortals sometimes traveled between worlds, and so he traversed the space between worlds to find his answers there. Talax found nothing on his journeys to the worlds beyond Vaedrus, but caused much strife. He brought magic to worlds that had never seen it, and saw wonders that no Vaedran was ever meant to. When the gods themselves chastised him, he told them, "You who are eternal and creators of the world must know this secret. Tell me, and I need not disturb these distant peoples any longer." The gods refused, and Talax then tried to threaten them as he had with the immortals. Talax had made a grave error in thinking he could contest with the gods themselves. To spite Talax, the gods departed Vaedrus and shattered the links between worlds. The mightiest sorcerer ever to have lived was stranded on one world, when he knew in his heart that what he desired most was somewhere on another. In the end, Talax sent word to all the great kings and dragons, to the stone folk and the forest spirits, to the immortals and the greatest among mortal sorcerers. He gathered them, and they heeded his call. Fortifying Talax was woe to any who held their life dear. He stood amid the gathering, and the sun dimmed in the sky above, shrinking to a pinpoint of blinding light. Those who had gathered there gazed up in wonder and fear as the light and heat of the sun fell from the heavens in a great column of destruction that only a few, quicker to flee than the rest, managed to survive. Those survivors bore witness to the wars of pent-up rage that 700 winters beneath the boot of one sorcerer had held in check. Kyrus blinked away the sights and sound of Tellurak to think on what he had heard. That was the part that made Soria and Juliana fear for him, that the path he was treading had led Talax to madness and self-destruction. It was a long time before exhaustion claimed Kyrus.